Hi, everybody.
Hello.
Welcome to this lecture this evening on the topic of death and mourning. Let me tell you why I wanted to give this lecture tonight, the thing that motivated me to do it, besides the intrinsic interest of the topic. I have been experiencing something here at B'nai Tikva that I haven't experienced in any of the other congregations in which I've served, and that includes congregations in a little town in Michigan, a little town in Wisconsin, Marlboro, New Jersey, and Sweden. So I've been all around, right? And I've never experienced what I'm experiencing here, that there are a certain number of traditional Jewish practices having to do with death and mourning that, from a halachic point of view, are absolute standard operating procedures. It's simply what you do, with a period at the end of that. And what I have seen in many remarkable ways are people who don't do that, who are taking these very traditional Jewish rituals, principles, and ignoring them or choosing to go in a different direction. And I've never had to deal with that before. Right? In all of the other places that I've been, somebody died, the Chevra Kedisha came into the picture, did what was supposed to get done, end of story. All right? And here, by contrast, I keep on having to sort of discuss with people, well, you know, we should do this. No, I want to do that instead. So I'll go over the details of what I'm talking about. But one of the reasons that's so important for me to mention this is precisely the fact that one of the beauties of our system is precisely that it gives us a system. In other words, when somebody dies and we, the survivors, go through that intense period of conflicting emotions that we have, the last thing that we need to be doing is getting our Chinese menu of one from column A and one from column B and try and guess what it is that we ought to be doing. The greatest gift that the community can offer at that particular moment in time is to say, this is what you do. And the mourner is well served to simply go along and say, okay, let's do what you're supposed to do. Let me mention one example that I find to be rather humorous. Of course, we all have heard the expression, sitting Shiva. Okay? What does sitting Shiva mean? It means sitting for 7 days. So the Shiva is the word seven, so you're sitting Shiva. So, you know, it is not at all uncommon that people will inform me that they're going to sit Shiva for 3 days. That in and of itself is intriguing, that they're going to sit Shiva for 3 days. And it reminds me of, I once had a friend who was an art dealer, and one of the lithographs that he was selling was Matisse's Blue Nude. And he told me a story about somebody came in and looked at it and said, do you have that in brown? And it's like, yes, yeah, so I'm going to sit Shiva for 3 days. No, there is a reason that we sit Shiva for 7 days. There's a method in the madness. And for all of the things we do, not just some crazy tradition that comes out of nowhere, that if it doesn't feel right, we'll do something else instead. There is a profound psychological basis behind it. And let me try and talk a little bit about what that psychological basis is. It revolves around two different axes. One is our individual relationship to the deceased. And the second is, not unrelated, of course, is our attitude toward and anxiety about death. It is always the case, even in the best and most positive of relationships, it is always the case that the survivor feels guilt. That is built into the situation of a person dying. Keeping it real simple, there always could have been another conversation. There's always that argument that you had that you shouldn't have had. There's always that additional sensitivity that you could have offered. Even if you have to go all the way back to childhood and remember the vase that you broke, I'm speaking personally here, I have very, very clear memories about that, you know, that I still have the vase that I broke. But it is built into the situation. Guilt can come in a lot of different ways. The idea of being powerless to help. That you somehow let the person down by not doing X. I remember very vividly when my mother was dying. My father, may rest in peace, was a profoundly capable person. And I remember I was coming in from out of town. My mother was in hospice, so I met my father there. And this was several weeks before she died, and I remember seeing my father. I'd never seen it before in my life. He was sitting, his shoulders were sort of stooped, and he was looking down, and just seemed very, very weak. And he looked up at me and said, "What am I supposed to do? What am I supposed to do?" And the answer, of course, is you can't do anything. You know, I mean, we're way past, nobody can do anything except be there and so forth. But the idea that there was nothing for him to do, he was eating himself up inside. That he was somehow supposed to do something. Because, of course, we are supposed to do something. What does that mean? I mean, you know, if you love them, well, of course you're supposed to do something. But that doesn't necessarily mean that there's something you can do. So, in order to respond to that guilt, there is the whole system was known as kivud hamet, the honoring of the dead. And the systematizing of the honoring of the dead, the saying, these are the set rituals that we are supposed to use, the more we enforce that idea that these are the rituals that we are supposed to use, the more we, at the end of the process, at the end of the burial process and the Shiva process and so forth, can look at it and say, I did what I was supposed to do. What are you supposed to do, Dad? You're supposed to sit Shiva. You're supposed to make sure the mom has a Jewish burial. That's what you're supposed to do.